You know what that sound means? It's me and Calvin. My name is Matt Rury. The soothing saxophone you hear, of course, from the song Careless Whispers. Nope, Careless Whisper. That's our show, Careless Whispers with an S. Calvin, how are you tonight?
Pretty good. Yeah, you know what? I never really thought about like what a careless whisper, like, because if you have a careless phrase, right? It's like something that you like say without thinking. But I feel like to give someone a whisper automatically requires a certain amount of forethought. You know what I mean? So like a careless whisper, you're just really being irresponsible.
That's very irresponsible. Or maybe you're just trying to get a rise out of somebody. You know, maybe you've calculated something here.
Then it wouldn't be careless, right? It'd be a calculating whisper.
Well, I mean, it could be calculated, but also careless. What if there's bad math involved?
So like an incompetent whisper.
Uh huh. I guess it is. Anyway, this is our show on CLMS Media, and I am on Twitter at Team Green Truth. That's where you find the link once in a while. If you want to listen live, that's definitely where you're finding the link. Unless I emailed it to you because you're special. I don't really know how much Celtics we're going to talk here to lead off this show because I'm still not exactly sure how I feel about the off season. But let's start with just a real quick wrap up on the season. And listen, 2 weeks ago, actually 2 months ago, I said that it would be a disappointing result if the Celtics got to the or did not if they failed to get to the Eastern Conference Finals. Well, guess what? They did that. So it's not disappointing, even though they lost to the Cavs ultimately. That was their demise. Everybody predicted it. Everybody expected it. But guess what? They are the only team to beat either of the NBA finalists in a game in the playoffs this season. So I think when you look at it that way, it's pretty impressive because you have to factor Kawhi Leonard's injury into the Spurs losing in a sweep to the Warriors. But I still think it shows you that the clear-cut favorites are these two teams that are there right now. And for the Celtics to even come close to putting a scare into Cleveland I'm happy with that as a result. I think they played hard. They lost Isaiah Thomas. And they came together as a team without him. And ultimately, the season was a success. Because if you had said that they were going to be the one seed before the season started, people would have laughed you out of the building, right off the air. They would just laugh at you.
Yeah, and in terms of big picture, I totally agree. Because we had this conversation. I said the same thing, that they had to get the Eastern Conference. It worked out okay for Ainge, the whole, like, you know, should Ainge have made a trade thing? Because the thing is just that they weren't really competitive in that Cleveland series, which actually brings up an interesting question I'd be interested to put to you, because I've been hearing this debate sort of on the post game and even a little nationally. Do you think that you gave Celtics, you know, the credit for that win, and that was a great moment, but do you think that, like, in light of how they played, especially in those three games in Boston, and sort of the amount at which by which they lost, is there any part of you that thinks like you'd be better off being Indiana and losing every one of those games by 3 or 4 rather than, you know, 20 or 30 and then having the one win? Or do you think
you might be able to take more out of it as a team is concerned, just because you can look at more tape where you played well, you know, but ultimately I think that the one win is something that these guys take away as a bigger deal than keeping it close for four games, because they kept it close for four games or three. Four games. They kept it close for four games in relative terms, I guess, because a lot of those Indiana games were blowouts at times. And then they either they clawed back into it and didn't really have a chance to win at the end, or Cleveland came back from being down big in one of those games and blew it open. So their momentum's carried them. So I think you can draw similarities between the games that the Celtics lost by 10 to 12 points on the road and the game they won. And you can draw between that and the Pacers series in as a whole. So I don't know. I also think that once Thomas went down, regardless of his prowess on defense, how you feel about him as a defensive player, they had to change on the fly, and they weren't used to that. And to me, when you're changing things on the fly in a playoff series, that is all the more reason for the team with the better player and best player to win. So the Celtics, people aren't giving the Celtics enough credit for not only winning a game without Isaiah, but playing relatively hard throughout those other two games and some keeping it somewhat close without him as well.
Yeah, I think that my, you know, the one reservation I have about sort of looking at the entire process as a positive is like I didn't love the effort by the Celtics in the three games at home, especially game two and even more so game five, just because they missed a lot of open shots, but I just felt like they had sort of had their will broken a little bit in a way that I wouldn't expect from this Boston team. You know, I understand losing, you know what I mean, and I understand getting outplayed. They're a better team than you, all of those things. It just sort of seems like there was a point in which in both game two and game five, and the point being early on where they sort of just gave up in the game, and I didn't love sort of the optics of that. But maybe you saw it differently.
Well, I think in game five, that was the straw that broke the camel's back. They had been fighting so long, and they just didn't have enough ammo, you know? So there's a point where they probably did give up. But in game two, I don't know if I would go so far as to say that, because I think they were still trying to play hard, and even though they could sort of see that Cleveland was just totally dominating them. So I don't know. Either way, I'm not going to disparage them for the way that the series went, because I think that they were there and that's where they were supposed to be, and it was a good indicator of how much better Cleveland actually is. I want to see what happens as far as the role players going forward, because Jerebko is going to walk now. You got to imagine Amir Johnson is gone, and there's going to be a handful of other guys that they either cut or trade. So there are going to be some open roster spots, and you've got a couple guys overseas. You've got probably Markelle Fultz coming in, and more importantly to me, for this team to really take a step in the right direction, they need to find another veteran presence like Amir Johnson was a few years ago. He was a little bit healthier when they first signed him, and he's really fallen off the face of the earth as far as players in the NBA are concerned. So I want them to go out and get or improve the 4/5 position, depending on where you're going to play Horford. That's most important for me.
It'll be interesting to see if they in fact don't get younger overall, because like you said, they do have those overseas guys they got to bring in. Yabusele guy is hurt, right? He might not come over now. I heard something about that, but
I don't know.
I don't know. Definitely a Jewish guy, and then
those guys play right now? You never know with those guys, you know.
I definitely am not on the watch a 2-minute YouTube clip of Digits and talk about how he's going to dominate the NBA next year. I like to wait until, especially like guys like that who play like 14 minutes a game in Spain. Like even if they're an effective 14
right.
minutes, like I have no idea how that translates to the NBA. Like I'm not even saying this is a negative. Like maybe he'll be off. Maybe he'll be way better than I thought. But until I see a guy play half a season in the NBA, I'm not ready to call him anything one way or the other, you know? But the point I was making is like their overall roster might be a little younger next season just because of those guys you talked about leaving and probably being replaced roster spot-wise with younger players. You know what I mean? Especially, like, you didn't even mention Kelly Olynyk, who is a free agent, but the Celtics might have Oh, you're not a fan of Olynyk, right? I can't remember.
I'm afraid that they're going to re-sign him somehow, and I don't want it to happen, but I think it's going to. I think they like him a lot, and I just hope they realize that if they're going to really take a step in the next direction, I don't think he's enough. I think if they want to keep him and make him the eighth or ninth guy, then maybe he surprises some people next year or something. But I don't think he's a guy that's going to be playing on a playoff contending team.
I think it's unlikely they bring him back just simply because in order to give someone a max offer like a Gordon Hayward or whoever they're targeting in this offseason, be it Blake Griffin or Millsap, or maybe someone you don't like, maybe someone you do. The point is they're probably going to try to make a huge offer at somebody, but in order to do that, you have to renounce Kelly Olynyk's cap hold. So for Kelly Olynyk to re-sign with the Celtics, basically Kelly Olynyk is going to have to wait around through free agency until the big free agent sign.
Yes, and then, he is.
And then, which also it takes away from his opportunity to go elsewhere. And the Celtics have no, they don't have any cap, connection to him. And then he's going to, re-sign with the Celtics after that on a lower deal. It's like, maybe he really loves Brad Stevens. And the thing is, if they sign that max guy, they can't sign Kelly Olynyk anyway. So he's
hold on a sec, though. Isn't he's restricted? Or I think he's restricted.
He is restricted, but it doesn't matter. Because for them to free up the cap space, if they renounce his rights, he becomes unrestricted.
That's how
that works. Yeah.
Okay. So he's restricted and he goes against the cap. I gotcha.
Yeah. Exactly. So he can be restricted if they don't want to free up that money to go after the max free agent. But that seems to be their plan as of right now. So I imagine he will be an unrestricted free agent. And it's hard for me to see a young guy like that just waiting around on the off chance that the Celtics don't get anyone they want and then re-signing back with him.
No, he'll probably sign with the Raptors or Magic or something. Who knows who's going to throw a ton of money at him. Somebody will, though. That's the point that I was going to try and get to, is that who is going to overpay for this guy? That's what I want to know.
What would you pay for Olynyk if you're in today's NBA? $10 million? What are we talking about here? What do you think Kelly Olynyk could?
In today's NBA or in tomorrow's NBA? Because I consider Al Horford's contract to be tomorrow's NBA. You know what I mean?
No, I don't. I feel like Al Horford's contract is yesterday's NBA. Because tomorrow's
You
NBA
do?
Is, yeah, because tomorrow's NBA, the cap's already going up tomorrow. You know what I mean? Even Mike Conley's max contract won't be a max contract by next year. It'll be close, but
I think that Al Horford is overpaid right now, and I think that next year he's going to be underpaid.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know that it'll swing that far. I wouldn't say that he'll be underpaid by next year. I think
right now he's a top. Let's see, one, two. There's eight guys or seven guys that are paid as much as him or LeBron right now. So I'm saying that if he is still a top 10 paid player at the start of next year, then I think he's going to be underpaid because I think there's that much of a swing with him. I think he's important. I think he's an excellent player. And if he drops out of that top 10 and drops down to 15 or 16, then I don't know how many guys are getting re-upped this year. But I would imagine that a lot of them are going to be making more than that $26 million. So that's where I'm starting to look at it and say in tomorrow's NBA, Al Horford to me is going to be an underpaid player. And I'm only using Al Horford as a gauge to where I'm going with Kelly Olynyk, because $10 million is probably about right. Even in tomorrow's NBA for Kelly Olynyk, in my mind,
right,
he shouldn't be making more than $10 or $12 million. But when you look at salaries for this year and you're looking at players around that salary range, I mean, you're talking about guys like Zach Randolph in the last year of his career. I mean, let's just go to Al Jefferson, Teletovich, Dudley, all these guys, they're not that great. You know, they're not players that do even really do anything in the league. So that would kind of be a slap in the face to him next year, in my opinion, because that's he.
Oh yeah.
Worth more than that, you know.
Yeah, no, you're right. It might well be the he gets the Evan Turner special of a Doom unit.
Man, where is Turner on this list? 45. Right between. Oh man, that's ironic. He's right between Clay Thompson and Gordon Hayward.
There you go.
That's so
just
brutal.
Just as good as those guys, man.
He's just as good as those guys, and you're looking at his bank account. That's right.
All right, so we'll obviously continue to talk about the Celtics every week. A lot of talk about what they should do in the off season. You're not ready to talk about Isaiah, but we'll get there. We'll get to Fultz. What do you think about Lonzo like deciding not to work out for the Celtics? You think that's just posturing because he already knows that they're going to draft Fultz regardless? Or
well, I was listening to something today where I guess Steve Bulpet, a columnist here in Boston, wrote over the weekend that he believes that Ainge has wanted Fultz all along, and that's why he didn't trade the pick without having it protected in this draft, because he wants Fultz. So I think that regardless of whatever posturing happens down the line here with the Lakers, et cetera, Ainge is going to take Fultz unless somebody throws Anthony Davis in his face or a player of that caliber, or he can get it in writing that they're not going to take Fultz with the number one pick and he can get him lower. I think they're using the pick, and I think he's probably not even going to really entertain many offers.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's not legal. NBA would get it in writing.
Of course not. See, this is what I'm saying. So he's using the pick. Like, there's not many. There aren't many choices here if you're Danny Ainge, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, not to go back to Isaiah, which said we wouldn't, but I think if you committed enough to Isaiah, then I would think about moving the pick. But I don't think Celtics should be, and we'll talk about that a little bit. I mean, if you're committed to giving Isaiah...
Forget being committed to Isaiah. Danny Ainge is committed to the best player. And if he thinks that Fultz is going to end up being a better player than Isaiah Thomas, then of course he's going to entertain trade offers for Thomas. But that goes for any player. If Fultz was 6 inches taller... let's go with 4 inches taller or four to 6 inches taller. And then Al Horford was the guy that he was technically going to be replacing. Ainge would be able to trade Horford too. He's not afraid of doing stuff like that. He would pull the trigger if he had to. I don't think he's going to, because I think he sees the value of having a guy like Isaiah Thomas and Markel Fultz on the same team, especially if he is going to let Isaiah walk away.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's ultimately an allocation of resources thing. That's why I do think he's going to let Isaiah walk away.
Gives Fultz the reins, and then he can go after another big name free agent, and it just reshapes the team. People aren't going to like hearing that. We should probably say it every week over the course of the summer, because we'll get a lot of hate listens at that point. But people aren't going to like hearing it. But I believe that the best course of action at this point, assuming they're going to take Fultz, is to have them play a year together. If Isaiah wants to take a hometown discount on some sort of extension, then maybe you can find a way to fit that in. But if not, and he really wants the max supermax deal, let him play his ass off, and then let him get that money somewhere else. And then you go after a guy that you think fits better when you have Fultz on the floor with whomever, Bradley, whoever's still around. It doesn't matter who you're going to piece there. Horford obviously is probably going to be one of those pieces. But in my mind, man, as much as I hate to say it, Isaiah's been awesome, and we weren't going to get into it. And we'll definitely talk about it more going forward. This is the tease. We'll get into the real reasons why in the coming weeks. But let him walk away. Have another awesome year with Isaiah, and let him walk.
Yeah, I feel bad for Isaiah because, first he's going through this hip surgery, so that's now a thing. You know, even if they wanted to trade him right now, that's an obstacle to that now because, his health is going to be in question, especially with something for a hip, so he might have to come back and play. But then he's making these comments out there, Yeah, I'm willing to wait for Danny Ainge to back up the Brinks truck to me, because I understand he's trying to get free agents now. And it's like, I get it. I get your situation, and he's been so good for the Celtics. But like, Danny Ainge was not going to offer him a contract extension in this season and hinder their money anyway. Even if Isaiah said, "Please pay me now," you know what I mean? Danny Ainge is Danny Ainge. But so I get why he was like trying to play the political game and save face, but like, Danny doesn't play, man. He doesn't care about anything. He doesn't care about Isaiah. So hopefully it works out for him.
He cares about his job, you know. He takes pride in his job. He takes pride in his work. I think he always has. And if you really want to do that job right, you can't be the owner of the team. You can't get into the sentimental value. You can't be a fan. You have to look at putting yourself and your organization in the best position that you can for the next 5 to 10 years, because you know what? It might even be a little bit of selfishness on Danny Ainge's part too, because he wants to keep his own job, right?
Yeah.
He's got to look out for himself. He wants to be the GM of the Boston Celtics, I would imagine, in the year 2025. So if he's going to do that, he needs to set it up so that they still think that he's doing the right thing. And that means continuing to improve the team. And if that means even trading Isaiah right now to get a guy like Fultz in here and get him the playing time he needs, et cetera, build the young core, then he's going to do it. Ainge is not afraid of something like that. Anyway, we spent too much time on the Celtics, Calvin.
Yeah, maybe you could trade Isaiah Thomas to the Spurs, because you know who's not going to the Spurs today? Chris Paul. I'm calling right now. Calling my shot. Chris Paul is not going to the Spurs. As much, even though it's
just as a free agent.
Yeah, or as a signing trade. Or no, actually, no, just as a free agent, because they don't have a signing trade. Unless the Spurs are trying to trade Kawhi to the Clippers, and then I'll reevaluate this entire conversation. Chris
Definitely
Paul's
not
going to the Spurs. Yeah, LaMarcus Aldridge for Chris Paul is not going to get it done, right? So if we're talking trade. What do the Spurs have to trade? Pau Gasol's contract? Bring Pau Gasol back to L.A.? What are we talking
Certainly
about?
Certainly not.
Jonathan Simmons? Yeah. Jonathan Simmons and Danny Brown combination for Chris Paul? It's not. Look, they don't have the assets to trade. More importantly, yes, they could get under the salary cap to a certain degree, okay, by moving certain guys who are movable. The Spurs, like, they have this dream that, like, Pau Gasol's not going to pick up his $16 million player option or whatever. There's no chance in hell Pau Gasol doesn't pick that option up. You might as well just get used to that money being off the books now. But there are guys they could trade. They could trade, like, Tony Parker, probably. They could trade, like, your Patty Mills or your Danny Green. I almost call him Danny Brown. But anyway,
that would have been the second time. I was wondering if there was a guy I didn't know on the Spurs, and I was like, wait a minute, who's Danny Brown? Do you know a guy
Danny
named Danny Brown?
Yeah, no, he's a rapper, and I'm mistaking him for Danny Green. Danny slash color name, that's how it is. No racism here, folks. Anyway, the point I'm making is, yeah, first of all, Chris Paul is like the player rep for the union, all right? And like, Chris Paul specifically was the driving force behind, like, changing the supermax age limit from being 36 to like being able to be 38. Chris Paul is 32 right now, going to be a free agent, and now he can sign a 5-year supermax deal because he raised the years 2 years. He's signing that deal. Chris Paul is getting paid regardless.
Oh, yeah.
And the only team that can pay him that is the Clippers. I mean, like I said, maybe they could trade him to the Spurs. I don't see them being motivated to do that, because Chris Paul, yeah, he may not be, like, ecstatic about what's happening with the Clippers, but Chris Paul is also, like, not the dude who's – he's not going to force the trade out of L.A., first of all. And secondly,
oh, I was about to say, what if he forces the trade back to New Orleans?
For Davis?
For Cousins.
For Cousins. So you're the Clippers, and you're running a DeAndre Jordan Cousins-based team?
Yep, that's what I'm doing. If that's assuming you're going to play to Chris Paul's demands, which maybe Doc Rivers resigns before he does that.
I don't know that Chris Paul, like, if he wants to leave, demands to go to New Orleans, right? I mean, if Chris Paul really made demands and the Clippers were in the catbird seat, like, I would have to think that the Chris Paul for Kyrie deal is the thing that makes more sense than anything. He'd want to play with LeBron. LeBron would want to play with him. Kyrie is a younger, much younger player that, like, gives something back to the Clippers. But, again, I don't see any of these things happening. Maybe the Kyrie thing could happen, like, if the Warriors just destroy the Cavs, then we could revisit this conversation after the finals. I'm not saying Chris Paul won't ever go somewhere else. What I'm saying is Chris Paul is not going to sell for less than the Supermax, and he's not going to San Antonio. Those are the two things that I'm promising you right now. As fun as it would be, if I'm the Spurs, I'm already, like, trying to do what I can to get Kyle Lowry, because I think that's a much more reasonable expectation for, like, what
to
do.
So let me ask you then, assuming Chris Paul signs the Supermax with the Clippers, will he go down as the best player ever to not win a championship?
Best player ever to not win a championship. I'd have to take a look at the guys. Is Chris Paul better than Karl Malone?
That's part of it. That's one of the guys I was thinking of.
Okay.
I mean, it would be Stockton, too. You'd have to compare him directly to Stockton, and I think most people would say yes.
I think Chris Paul is better than John Stockton. I'll just come right out and say it. No, I don't need to weigh it, debate it. Chris Paul is a better basketball player than John Stockton.
Are we talking about Barkley here?
We are talking. Barkley is in the mix, yeah.
Barkley, yep. I mean, Elgin Baylor never won a title. How do you feel about that?
Wait, didn't he win one with the Lakers? I thought
nope.
That he did.
Retired early. I'm looking at a list right now. He retired in 71-72, early in the season. They won the title that year. So I guess in today's NBA, he had a ring. But
he got a ring.
Back then, he did not get one. He retired.
So if a guy gets hurt the year a team wins the championship, do you count that as a guy winning a title?
So back then, I would think, even just like it is now, you would probably think yes. But Baylor specifically retired, so he did not get a ring. So actually, that would be a good question. Had X player been, let's say Richard Jefferson retires right now, does he get a ring if the Cavs win? You know what I mean? So I'm not sure how that works, but that, according to this USA Today list that I'm looking at, Elgin Baylor has never won a title. But as far as the other players in this list are concerned, Kevin Durant, which who knows, he could win one this year. Patrick Ewing, Stockton, Iverson, Dominique Wilkins, and USA Today has Chris Paul at number 9.
Yeah, I think
so
the USA Today.
We're projecting out 5 years from now, right? That's the question. Assuming Durant gets a ring in the next 5 years, Chris Paul going to end his career better than Iverson, Ewing, Malone, Baylor, and Barkley? In my opinion, I think yes. If he plays at a high level for the next 5 years, he surpasses all those guys.
I think Malone and Barkley are the only debatable ones to me. I think he's better than the other guys. You know, if you want, you put up whatever fuss you want about Ewing, but, like, if Ewing had a ceiling, you know what I mean? And I could argue Chris Paul does too, but I feel like Chris Paul's ceiling is higher than Ewing. Like, Ewing was, like, the lower end of that era of center. Like, he wasn't David Robertson or Akeem Olajuwon. So, I think right now, Malone and Barkley probably still have Chris Paul, but like you said, if he plays at a high level for another 5 years, which, you know, given the attrition that Chris Paul seems to be suffering, who knows if that will be the case.
Right.
But obviously longevity factors into greatness, but yeah, he's close. He's right there.
All right. That's the Careless Whispers hypothetical segment of the day.
Yeah. Well, we can go to another hypothetical segment, which is who wins the NBA Finals, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Who wins the NBA Finals? Well, Calvin, I think the Warriors are just too stacked They're too loaded, and it doesn't matter who Cleveland throws at a couple of these guys. I think the Warriors are always going to find a way to get open shots, and four out of the five guys on the court for them at all times are instill confidence in me when they're shooting. Pretty much the way that they end games and things like that. And sometimes it's 5 out of 5. I don't feel that way when I watch the Cleveland Cavaliers play basketball. To me, it's a 2-man game in Cleveland, and once in a while, Kevin Love will knock down a shot. And it's just Golden State just looks – they look too powerful. Kevin Durant being there and just them already being kind of a juggernaut type of team. I'm not saying they're going to wipe the floor with Cleveland because I think LeBron has some pride and those guys are going to win a couple games. But Golden State in 6 sounds right to me.
Yeah, I also like Golden State in 6, but it's kind of for the opposite reasons. Like, I don't care, like, how they looked at times in the Celtics series, at times how good they didn't look, and how good they looked in the Toronto series, that says anything, how good they didn't look. I still don't think these Cavs can play defense. No, they can play defense better than they did during the regular season. I'm not trying to say they didn't flip any switch, but, like, I still saw a lot of wide-open shots, even in that Celtics series, and it was part of the reason why I was critical of the Celtics earlier. It was not that they couldn't stop LeBron. It's like they just missed a lot of open shots. And like they had a lot of opportunities. They just let slip past them.
Yeah, that's exactly what I said. Just, well, in different words, just Golden State's going to knock those down. They're going to find a way to get open shots, and they're going to knock them down.
Yeah, but to me, the difference is just like Golden State can defend 1 through 5.
Of course.
Curry is not a great defender. I don't think Cleveland doesn't have a chance. I think for Cleveland to go off, it's going to be Kyrie going off again, like he did last season in the finals. I think the Warriors have a tough time matching up with him. But the difference in my mind is, like, the Warriors, as good as they were last year and in the year before, they're a team that, like, it has the ability to, you know, they have the ability to go cold and just lose a game. And they wouldn't necessarily have guys who can create, you know, when they're not hitting shots and in isolation situations. Well, like, that's Kevin Durant's specialty. When they go cold, and Klay Thompson hasn't hit a shot all playoff, and it hasn't mattered at all, because Kevin Durant, and, you know, Curry's a good isolation player as well, but, like, you need more than one, because, you know, guys can double-team, guys can take the ball out of his hand. Kevin Durant can shoot over anybody in the NBA, and I feel like the way this matchup is working, it's going to be hard for them. It's going to be hard for Cleveland to stop them with a bad defense anyway, and Golden State, who's like their defense is much better, I just feel like they're going to turn Cleveland over more. I feel like they're just going to get more stops in big moments than Cleveland is, so maybe the games will be close, but I trust Draymond Green in that situation more than I trust anybody on the Cavs.
Yep, and you know what? I think this is going to be an indictment on Durant if they lose. And it's going to be it's going to be time to heap praise on him if they win, because I think it's going to come down to him. I think he's going to have to make big shots. I think he's going to have to take over at times and have the killer instinct that Steph Curry has shown he's had the last couple of years, and that LeBron James has shown time and time again that he has. If you got two guys that have that killer instinct, and I mean, even Kyrie Irving, it's showing it a little bit here and there. If you have two guys that have that instinct, you are going to be in the NBA Finals, and that's what we've seen from both of these teams. But it comes down to Kevin Durant, in my opinion, because he's the guy that hasn't proven it in the Finals before. If he wilts under the pressure, if he fades and misses some shots or something, and he starts to defer to other guys, then Golden State might be in a little bit of trouble, because who knows who else is going to be hot any given night besides Curry, of course. But a guy like LeBron James is not going to back down. So that's why, to me, Golden State is going to be – they should be run by Kevin Durant in this series. And if he steps up, which I believe he will, because I think he has an edge about him now that he's been playing with some of these guys, Green, et cetera. I think they're going to win the series. But it comes down to Kevin Durant.
Yeah, I'm glad you put it that way, because I'm always curious when it comes down to the NBA Finals. Like, it's not always like just about who wins the NBA Finals, but like how are legacies affected one way or another by sort of the course of this series. So I'm wondering. You mentioned Durant first, so we might as well start with him. Let's go the opposite. What if Kevin Durant doesn't play well in this series, but Steph Curry plays phenomenally, and the Warriors win? How do you think that impacts like Kevin Durant's national perception? Do you think that obviously he'll still get for winning the title, but
well,
do you think like
right.
the average hater will be like, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I don't know. I would guess that immediately they would take away from the win for him and heap stuff on Curry. But as time goes by, especially if Durant is still a top three player in the league over the next 5-10 years, people are going to forget that he had a bad final. So he will have a chance to redeem himself, but I think the immediate aftershock would be that of sort of taking away and the sort of degrading his play, you know, not him as a person, of course, but just trying to take something away from the win as far as Kevin Durant is concerned, and then he preys on whoever stepped up.
There's always been this interesting thing that didn't exist before Michael Jordan, that like since Michael Jordan seems to have existed with like every championship team with multiple stars, right? Like somebody has to be labeled the Jordan of the team, and the second person has to be labeled the Pippen. You know what I mean? Like you saw when LeBron and Wade first joined Miami, there was like a brief like, which one is the Jordan here? Well,
sure,
Wade
yeah.
was here first. So and it like it became so quick. Clear so quickly that Wade, even though obviously Wade gets credit for those title teams, I don't think anyone like thinks of Wade as like leading the Heat. And Wade is a special case because he led the Heat to another championship as the sort of Jordan figure. But he's seen as like the Pippen figure of those Heat teams, right? You probably agree with that, right? Like he is seen as the second.
Yeah, definitely.
LeBron.
He's Pippen and he's Kobe because he played with Shaq too.
Yeah, and. The Warriors are in this like weird, unique position where like I don't think we've entirely decided who the Pippen is on this team, because like Steph Curry, it's like I feel like people want to say that Steph Curry is the Pippen, but the thing is that Steph Curry won a championship last year, right? And Durant comes on this team, and there's like I almost feel like people aren't sure which one of them is the better player, and there's this part of me that like that thinks that. Yeah, they are competing with the Cavs, but there's like a small element of, even if it's not intentional on their part, but just in terms of perception, they're kind of competing with each other to a degree. Do you disagree with me?
I mean, I guess. I feel like they can play together, though, and they can make it so that they both come out looking shiny, you know?
I know. I agree with you there. I don't mean competing with each other in a negative way, like rooting for one to do bad. Obviously, they can both have great games, and maybe they will both be great in these finals. And then it'll be sort of the hardest version of like the hardest version of like which one was Jordan and which one was Pippen since early Lakers, right? When Kareem still had it. That's like the last time I can think of.
So you know what? This is tough for Klay Thompson, right? Because there was a time where he was supposed to be the Pippen to Steph Curry's Jordan. So now that Durant is there, he's kind of just the third wheel, right? I'm starting to feel bad for him.
Yeah, and the problem with Klay is that like what he does is sort of like it's already a lesser version of what Curry does to a degree. With the, obviously not the off the dribble stuff, but like shooting. And it's like half Curry, half Durant in terms of what he does. And he's not as good as either one of them. But the problem is that Draymond is like his skill set is so totally different that I feel like it's like Draymond's value in terms of how people see this team as like the Rodman has sort of it sort of pushed Klay Thompson down to the Tony Kukoc role. You know what I mean? It's like a luxury now if Klay Thompson plays well. I don't think do you feel like Klay Thompson has to play well for the Warriors to win the finals? I don't.
No, definitely not. But I mean, it would be nice if he did play well. It's funny how things work like that in the NBA, though.
We all sort of talk about teams and top to bottom, with who has the best team, whatever. But really, it comes down to who's got the top 2 to 3 guys that are going to step up night in, night out. And it maybe it's that they're not even asking as much of Klay Thompson because they have those two guys, and that's why he's not really playing that well. But he was at the top of his game in the last couple of years, and people are starting to talk about him as a superstar type of player and certainly a superstar type of talent. And to that, I just want to do a little quick tangent and quickly wonder how good is Devin Booker really going to be on a team with a player that's better than him and leading the way. And I thought of him because he scored 70-plus points in that meaningless game against the Celtics this year, and he's an up-and-coming star. But just him as a general idea in the NBA, how effective can those guys, types of guys really be on a NBA Finals championship contender?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like a catch-and-shoot guy with enough volume and being like enough like reaching a certain level of quality in terms of catch and shoot, like that's obviously super valuable. I mean, Klay is like okay off the dribble now. He used to be terrible, but he's not somebody amazing that you could like run your entire offense through like a Klay Thompson pick and roll or something like that, right? So like a lot of Klay Thompson shots are created off of space created by Curry and, you know, now created by Durant, but previously Curry and Draymond, you know, going up against a guy who's slower than him from the perimeter, freeing up, like, you know, a lot of his assist were to Klay Thompson. So I think Klay Thompson can be super valuable in sort of like a bigger Ray Allen who can play defense sort of way. But, like, you wouldn't want, like, I don't know, you just in the same way you wouldn't want Devin Booker to be, like, the primary fulcrum of your offense, you wouldn't want that to be Klay Thompson either. So given the right team, Klay Thompson can put up, you know, his 37-point quarters. But given the wrong team, he's still valuable because he still creates that spacing for you. But he's just going to be like sort of the, you know, the 15-point-a-game guy that you see on a lot of teams who, you know, he's your Jay Crowder in another situation. And he's obviously a much better shooter than Jay Crowder. He doesn't, you know, he can get a shot off in much less space. But you understand what I'm saying.
Yes. Yes, I do. Anyway.
Let me ask you this question. So Curry wins another title, right? Gets another MVP. When we factor in his back-to-back MVPs of the regular season and then two titles, do you think it's enough, even at his age, which I think is like 27, 28? Like, can we already start like trying to figure out where Steph Curry is on the list of guards? Do you think it's too early in his career at that point? Two-time MVP in the era of LeBron, one of the best seasons ever, two championships. Is it just still not enough to like?
No, I mean, I think you can start to talk about it for sure, because there really, how many top guards are there? I mean, unless you're going to consider Michael a straight-up guard, but if you're looking at point guards, the list is not really that long of point guards that led their teams to titles consistently. And he would be looked at as one of those guys. So you definitely have to start putting him up there in the conversation. And then after the next couple of years, I would imagine that he would pass a lot of the guards at the top of that list.
Let me ask you this. Steph Curry wins another title, all right, wins the MVP. So he went to three finals, won two MVPs, one MVP because he could all win the other one. Won two regular season MVPs, and then he breaks his leg and has to retire. Do you think Steph Curry is a better player than Chris Paul at that point, or do you still stick with Paul?
That's tough. Curry's teams have been so much better for the past couple of years. I would still, with the bulk of his career, go with Chris Paul just because he does it year in, year out. He does it on good teams. He does it on bad teams. He's never won a title, but I don't necessarily blame him for that. That would be a tough circumstance for Curry because he's certainly on a trajectory right now to put him in the top echelon of all NBA guards of all time. But if he were to stop playing after a couple of years, I'm not so sure I would be able to do it.
All right, fair enough.
What about LeBron? You know, we had a couple weeks ago, we had Chelsea on, and I sort of made the argument that, you know, he's right there with Jordan, if not, like, past Jordan. Do you think that how much does it do for his legacy if he then beats these Warriors 2 years in a row with, like, inferior roster?
If he wins this series, that does it for me. Usually I've been harping on the amount that Jordan got. He was there so many times, and I don't think that Jordan's adversity once he got there was necessarily as strong as what LeBron's has been the last 3 years. And yeah, he's cherry picked quite a bit, and he's stayed in the East and all this. But if he finds a way to will his team to beat this Golden State Warriors team, then I think that puts him over the top. If not, if he doesn't win the thing, then he still has to get back there a couple more times before I start talking about it. But beating this team would be impressive.
So, yeah, I mean, for me, there's still a lot of value in finals appearances in which, like, I mean, there's not complete value, obviously, but, like, there's still some value in his 8 in a row, whatever he's up to now, something like that, right? I mean, I'm not exactly sure what his number is, but if you don't want to say it's Bill Russell-esque, it's at least, like, Jerry West-esque. You know what I mean? And that was, like, in a time where there were 8 teams versus the 30 teams there are now. I just think, like, that combined with the amount of titles he has is like, an impressive enough feat. But then if you go to 4 titles and you go, okay, Jordan, like the Jordan still has 2 more when you just look at everything else that's connected to it, it's going to be hard. Like, maybe you can say, like, well, Jordan never had a bad game as LeBron did in that weird Celtics game where you only had 11. Like, I think that's a good one-game argument, but I think if you're just looking at everything as a whole, like, you can't say that his like, the way he played overall is, you know, where at the height that LeBron's achieved at this point. But anyway, I digress. What's next?
All right. Well, we have about 10 minutes left. So
okay.
Why don't we get off the NBA and do a couple of quick hitters here, maybe 5 minutes each.
Yep.
What do you want to do first, the DUI or the fight?
Let's talk about the DUI.
All right,
so,
at it again, Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods showing up in the news for something not golf-related. He blew a 0.00, presumably alcohol was not involved, and that's what his statement said as well. But he was pulled over down in Florida, and he was asleep at the wheel, and his car was all banged up, and they're attributing it to the meds that he's been on for – all these surgeries that he's had, back fusions and Achilles and knee surgeries, etc. So I don't know where you're going with this, Calvin, but how much do you buy into all of it? And I mean, I think he's telling the truth as far as the meds are concerned. But that just is a sad state if that's the case, because I thought that this guy was starting to try and make a comeback in his old golf age and that he was actually going to be on the tour again, and it doesn't seem to look that way at this point.
Well, here's the thing. He had back surgery recently. He had meds. All of these meds were prescribed, like the meds that were found in the system. Yeah, he blew a 0.00. He was found apparently, like, pulled over, but his car was running. So I don't know, like, it's possible, in fact, probably likely, right, that he started driving, realized he was falling asleep and pulled over, but was so sort of exhausted that he couldn't turn his car off, which, yeah, I understand why the cops, like, I understand why they took him out, and I understand why they gave him sobriety tests and they gave him a DUI. But what bothers me about this is, first of all, it's like, everyone is in such a rush to judge this dude. The DUI arrest comes out, and everyone's like, like, all the media reactions of in people reactions of, like, yeah, Tiger Woods, you're a bad guy. Like, first you run out on your wife, and now you're getting DUIs, you're a menace, blah, blah, blah. It's like, I can empathize with, like, somebody having a bad reaction to medication and maybe needing to go somewhere, someone being on medication, trying to get somewhere, like, especially when the medication is new and it's stronger than you think. He had the back surgery recently. Like, I don't, even if one of those medications was different than one of the other
yep.
ones, like, you know what I mean? I can understand why you would, like, get in the car and sort of feel okay and have the medication take some time to kick in, and he would, it's sort of making him drowsier than he realized. Medication doesn't, like, everyone doesn't react to the exact same degree to medications. It's like it's a process of adjusting to it, and it's an unfortunate thing, and maybe you can argue that, like, the more responsible thing would have been for Tiger Woods to, like, have somebody drive with him just to make sure he was okay. Or
oh,
have
definitely.
That person drive. Yeah. And that's a fair statement to make, but just like calling out Tiger Woods for like being some kind of bad guy for this happening, and like, and I get the rush to judgment. That part is, it's like annoying, but whatever. But now people are saying like, oh, he's an opioid addict, or like people are like
no.
still blaming after the story's come out that like the exact circumstances of it are. And I get it. Tiger Woods is like kind of an annoying human being to me too, so I get like. Why you want to take your shots at him, but like, I don't know. This feels like a cut him some slack situation to me. I don't know if you're on the opposite side, but like.
No, I'm with you. It seems to me like he probably just made a mistake in getting in the car, and he should have just stayed home. Or, I mean, it blows my mind that this guy can't. He's made millions of dollars. He's a millionaire at this point, and he can't. He doesn't have anyone around that can. Help him out, or go to the store, or wherever he's trying to get to, or he doesn't have a single person, not somebody that is cooking for him, not someone that's cleaning for him. He doesn't have a friend next door. He doesn't have a butler that's tending to his every need. Anything, any type of person. Does he have a landscaping crew? Are any of those guys around? Can someone drive him somewhere? I just don't understand how a guy with that much money gets in these types of situations. That's the only thing that gets me. Like I empathize with the medication kicking in a way that he wasn't prepared for. But still, if you're on that type of medication, shouldn't you have somebody there helping you out? That's where I'm confused.
Yeah, I agree. I mean. But the other thing is, like, again, I don't know what the circumstances of that were. Maybe he sent somebody home. Maybe he was just alone in his place, and he was, like, closer to being fine when he started driving. Or maybe he sort of was not aware of how messed up he was based on the fact that, like, he's probably taking those medications anyway. You know what I mean? Like, maybe he was already sluggish. And, yeah, it was an unfortunate situation. But, yeah, and obviously you don't want anyone to be a danger on the road and, like, I don't think it was intentional, and I don't think it was, like, malicious drinking either. So because of that, I obviously wouldn't, would like him to be more responsible with his medications, but I don't really blame him too much, I guess, is where I come down. Are you on mute?
I think I was on mute there. We agree on Tiger Woods, and
okay.
Now we're going to move on to the baseball fight, which was one of the better baseball fights I've seen in a while, and suspensions have been handed down for this. Bryce Harper of the Washington Nationals, and oh my God, I had his name. Is it Henry Strickland?
It's something Strickland, yeah. I don't know what it is. Hold on. It's
Foolish. Anyway. Of the New York or the San Francisco Giants are both suspended for what happened in this game the other day. Hunter Strickland, Henry Strickland. I apologize, Hunter. Apparently, your teammates or some of your teammates don't really think too highly of you because they didn't get in the scrum. Buster Posey. Excuse me. This fight was awesome, and it's been brewing for the last couple of years between these two players because Strickland didn't like Harper taking him deep and doing the Harper type of thing, which I think he has every right to do, by the way. I love celebration in baseball as well. Let those guys go do whatever they got to do after hitting a bomb. If you don't like it, don't throw it there. But this guy beans Bryce Harper, one of the most prominent players of the modern era, I guess I would say. He's young, up and coming. He's but he's also established himself as one of the top hitters in all of Major League Baseball. So this guy's got a chip on his shoulder. If you don't know who Bryce Harper is, you should go check out some of the other stuff that he's done, not only with the bat, but with his temper as well. But yeah. I think that him defending himself in that manner was awesome. And I think he just clocked Strickland right in the face and then got out of there, and Strickland looked like the fool. Anyway, Harper was suspended 4 games and Strickland got 6 because he's a pitcher, a relief pitcher. So what's your take on this fight, Calvin? I thought it was great.
I mean, well, first of all, don't get me wrong. Bryce Harper was losing that fight and would probably lose. Like, based on what I was watching, I'd put my money on Strickland if that fight went to its natural conclusion. Because, you know, Bryce Harper was popping himself and it was fun, but I felt like Strickland was sort of getting the better of that. But, yeah, like, first of all, pitchers, hey, if you're tired of guys showing you up, you know what you should do? Just do a cartwheel when you get a strikeout. Like, why don't pitchers ever think about, like, doing their own show-ups? Throw your glove up in the air and then, like, catch it behind your back. You know what I mean? That's what I would do if I was a pitcher. Instead of hitting the next guy, just show them up yourself.
Not even, you don't even have to do that. Just point into the player or like, stare him down and give a scream. Where's Papelbon? You know, guys used to do that just 5-6 years ago, and they're not doing it anymore. And baseball, to me, has just gotten really soft. And I don't know whether it's the player's fault or whether this is coming down from executives in the league office, but I don't like the way that baseball has gone.
Yeah, and this guy particularly, Strickland, is such a jerk because Bryce Harper took him for 2 home runs in 2014. 2014, right? He's a relief pitcher, so he hasn't seen Bryce Harper since. He's been having this grudge on his mind the entire time. So he, like, gets revenge for something like it. First of all, there has to be a statute of limitations on, like, how long you can wait before you get revenge. I think it's, like, garbage when somebody, like, tries to attack somebody physically, throw a baseball at somebody's body, which is like a physical reaction to like not liking someone's the way somebody plays a game is like already insulting. But fine, rules of baseball, whatever. You have to let it go after that period of time. You know, you can't. That's why Buster Posey didn't go out. He knew it was stupid, and the Giants won that series and the World Series due to still being petty about Bryce Harper maybe taking a little too long to get around the bases. I watched those home run shots, and they were fine. So stop being a baby, Hunter Strickland. Like, I wish baseball had like suspended Strickland for more than they suspended Harper. I know it's 6 as opposed to 4, but he's a pitcher. I guess he's a relief pitcher, but still. I would have liked to have seen, you know, a greater imbalance to sort of reflect, the real causations of those situations. But I'm fine with it. It was fun, and I like a good fight.
All right. Good timing, because we are out of here. That's it. Long?
That's it.
No, short and late. That's what we were tonight. Thank you all for listening out there. I'm craving crawfish right now. I want some crawfish. Somebody tell me where I can get some crawfish in Boston. Please. Calvin, have a good one.
You too, buddy. Good night, everyone.